Are you seeing the mic?
We're rolling.
Are you seeing the mic?
No.
Okay. Oh, now I can't see my notes. All right.
I'll bring them over here for you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
Helen, let's start with Helen. And if you would just start off just introducing yourself. I can't do this at this instant. Starting with I'm, and then could you tell me a little bit about the community that you lead? The organization that you lead.
Okay. So I'm Helen Ying, and I'm for the purpose of what we're doing, I will go ahead and talk about my role in the Chinese American Citizens Alliance, both locally, the Portland chapter, as well as nationally. I serve on a national board of Chinese American Citizens Alliance as the national vice president for membership, and locally, I'm serving as the sole director on their board. You know, instead of an officer, I'm considered a director of the board.
It is incredibly noisy. I can really hear
it. It's going to be fine.
Okay. As far as you were talking about the WeChat. The WeChat incident and what led you to, I guess, have concerns? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, actually, it wasn't me that had concerns. It was really more of my friend who contacted me because, you know, she said the group that's organizing this rally in Portland, they don't have a lot of experience. They really need to have CCA get involved and help them to make sure that they have their T's crossed and their I's dotted. And so, and knowing, you know, that it what they're, you know, primarily because of the tension, you know, that it was a Chinese American officer, you know, and the person who was killed and shot and killed was an African American, and so there was a concern that the African American community may take issue with a group of Chinese rallying, you know, at Pioneer Square.
And did they?
Did they create alarm? No, like I said, because of the pre-work that we did to connect the leader of the group that was making the rally with leaders in the African American community, and so that they actually had an opportunity to talk to each other on the phone, so they understand, you know, what was behind this rally, and for the people who are organizing the rally, understand where the African American community might stand on the issue. And so, long story short, there was no incident, and one of the leaders, Teresa Rayford, from, got to get their name correctly, is Hands Up, Don't Shoot. That's the name of their group. She actually came and spoke at the rally alongside of other speakers that are Chinese Americans.
Hey, so what's your advice for other communities and organizations to build those bridges? How do you go about doing that?
So I think really is about gaining understanding, right? And I think it was mentioned, you know, even during our panel discussion or presentation, is building relationships and breaking down walls and really going in. You know, I remember one of my friends that I used to work with, you know, she often would say, I'm asking these questions because I'm really seeking for understanding. So it's asking questions and, you know, in a non-threatening way and willing to seek to learn and seek to understand.
Okay. I'm just going to switch to Scott. Okay. He's been listening intently. You talked a lot about the historic, I guess, precedent for creating divisions and tensions. I don't want to go too far back, but I thought what you said about the post-65 generation and the civil rights movement and how intertwined both the API and the African American communities are from that experience. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, take a breath. In 1965, we got immigration reform. Prior to 1965, there were racist immigration bans and quotas that favored European immigrants over immigrants from Latin America, Asia, and Africa. And the civil rights movement in that period of time created a context for a national discussion about race. And that national discussion about race allowed many of us to find our voices and start to push against these kinds of exclusionary laws. And we were able to eventually force the taking down of those bans. Those bans were not simply, though, taken down because of the kinds of demands that people in community made, though they did play a very important role. They were also taken down because of labor needs that the United States had, particularly during the time when we were involved in the Vietnam War. And a shortage of highly skilled laborers was created in the United States by that war, and we saw the necessity to be able to recruit them from abroad. Particular effort was made to recruit highly skilled workers, particularly medical service industry workers, from Asia, and particularly South Asia. We still live with the legacy of that and the number of South Asians who are doctors and other medical professionals. They are disproportionately represented in that industry. So by taking down those bans and opening those doors, we gentrified Asian America. We created a situation of immigration creaming, so that a significant number of new immigrants coming to the country, particularly from Asia, would have college degrees, employer sponsors, and a direct avenue to elite employment, and created the basis for a stereotype concerning Asian Americans, that somehow we were culturally superior, as opposed to simply that some of us were allowed in. The reality is that while these were highly educated immigrants, the feeder countries they came from, places like India and China and Korea and Vietnam, were not places in which a significantly high number of people were getting college degrees. In fact, the rate of college degrees among people who were immigrating into the country was much higher than in those countries. And so it wasn't representative of those countries or of Asian Americans generally. But this became the impression that it created. And that impression was exploited by those on the right, conservatives, who were concerned about the rapid advance of the civil rights movement. And they put out a story that went viral that focused primarily on Japanese Americans who had recently been interned en masse and were rising up into prosperity, and made the argument that the reason for it were cultural or racial characteristics, including that we were loyal, familially loyal in particular, that we were hardworking, quiet, cooperative, and obedient, and that we were willing to do whatever was necessary to make any sacrifice in order to be able to rise. Now, this is true of many different kinds of immigrant groups, but what this argument was used for was to make the case that if this group could rise, all groups should be able to rise by the same means, not through protest, but through work. And basically vilified African Americans who are reaching for rights by saying perhaps that's not the way, not the American way, because the way that Americans have achieved rights is by working for them. And so the two communities have forever since been played off against one another. It became a meme that was used by the Reagan administration and other conservative administrations since, and has become widely popularized, so that it's become kind of part of the racial common sense of the United States, that we believe that somehow Asians are more equipped than others to be successful, and that their success lies not in protest, not in asking for reform, but simply putting their heads down and working hard.
I'm going to keep with Scott. So were you surprised by the reaction about the Peter Leung case? I mean, was that expected in some ways?
Well, you know, the Chinese-American community in the United States is very diverse, as are all ethnic minority groups. And so, you know, there are people who have many different political persuasions. It didn't surprise me that much that some people would protest. You know, this is an incident in which a Chinese-American police officer has been prosecuted in a situation where most people in the same situation who are police officers are not prosecuted as vigorously, or at least that's the impression that has been created. And so it's certainly unfair. And so I did expect that there would be some outcry. I had hoped that we would be able to engage in a dialogue about this, about the rule of law, about whether or not we think it's okay for many officers to be getting off for committing these acts. If it is not okay to us, then why would we hold ourselves to that standard? Why would we hold ourselves to the standard that if others get off, we should get off too, in spite of the rule of law and in spite of the public safety problems that this creates? But the passion that drove those protests is something I, of course, can relate to. And Chinese Americans in the United States have been horribly persecuted for a very long time. And their persecution has never been fully addressed. And so people are looking for avenues for protest to make themselves visible and to make themselves vulnerable because they feel vulnerable. You know, they want to feel powerful because they feel vulnerable. And I think that that's a really important part of this that we should remember. There's been a lot of talk about how they're just wrong-headed. The reality is that, you know, many groups in the United States, as we rise into political participation, do so awkwardly and have to look for issues in order to organize ourselves around. And I believe that this is not going to be the way that these issues get polarized every time. I think that people are building bridges and making it possible for us to have a dialogue that will move us forward together.
Thank you. I was going to switch to Helen now.
Okay. I'm going to open up these blinds real quick so we can get a little more light.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's starting to get darker. And then we'll end. But that was really well done. I really like how you encapsulated it and put it into perspective historically.
Thank you.
Really good. I'm going to basically ask you the same question, too. Once he's ready. So were you surprised by the reaction from the Chinese American community regarding the Peter Liang case?
So to me, I don't know if you picked up when Jennifer was talking about the folks that had the kind of response were mostly newer immigrants.
Yeah, can you tell me, rather than assuming what that people would know what that response is, could you start with that response was?
And, sure. And so you remember, you know, one of the things that is that many of the unrest came about WeChat discussions. And so like I'm just going to give the case that we know about locally. It started with one person feeling like, you know, and the information they got mostly from Chinese media. And so I don't really know what they follow. So when I got wind of this, I contacted our national network, you know, and like our national president says, hey, this is what's happening in Portland. What are you guys hearing about what's going on in other parts of the country? And so what we have seen, like online, is a lot of Mandarin speaking, more, you know, folks who are newer immigrants from mainland China that are having this kind of response, and because a lot of the information they have received are from Chinese written language media, and they really feel, because they don't know like the big picture of, except for the fact that here this poor, you know, this is what I learned from the local leader, you know, this is how he put it. He says, this is a young officer whose parents don't even speak English. And when he was being tried, his parents couldn't even come to the trial, to the court, because they have to work. So basically he's saying, you know, that this officer didn't even get really the time of day, because his parents, you know, they don't have the means, they might not even have been able to hire a lawyer that could represent him well. And so they were kind of looking at it from that angle as well, besides the fact, you know, about what Scott mentioned earlier about, you know, the history of how many white officers, you know, have been involved in police shootings and so forth. So that is just one part of it too, you know. But so they just felt like he was being scapegoated because, you know, he's like this quiet, cooperative, you know, that kind of the model minority myth, right? And so I think a lot of that plays into what had happened with how many of the folks around the country had, rallied around this particular case by demonstrating, by protesting. And so, and the thing too is that really this at the bottom line, they also want to see this is as a way to connect the community, to really say, you know, let's not stay silent. Let's really speak up and let our voice be heard. And so that's what's happening right now locally with this group, which is really cool.
Yeah. It's happening now?
Right now.
Okay.
So the leader, you know, I don't know if you want me to use his name, but since the rally, he stayed connected. And so, you know, I kind of told him about how we're trying to work on revitalizing Chinatown, right? And how a lot of the buildings that are kind of like that are vacant and that are owned by Asian or Chinese Americans are being, because, you know, people wanting to sell, and so a lot of them are transferring hands to people who are non-Asian. So I, as you know, want a person who's involved in this work, I'm kind of concerned about that. And so I kind of shared it with one of the leaders, and he got a group together, raised enough money, and bought a building. And then in turn, he also organized cultural performances for three consecutive Saturdays.
What group is this?
They don't even have a name. Oh. But it's like they just formed themselves by chatting on WeChat. I think, you know, they're coming up with a name, but they haven't actually created a name yet, so...
That's a pretty good success story for you.
That's great.
It is really cool to see them banding together and, you know, wanting to stand up and make their voices heard. Yeah.
Well, thank you. It just sounds like, in summation, that, you know, it helped having a larger perspective.
I think so.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you were bringing into it, too, is to have that historic, larger perspective. Yeah.
What's that King quote that a riot is the language of the unheard? You know, these were not riots by any means. These were orderly, peaceful protests. But we have an unheard from minority trying to tell its story. And I think we should be listening.
Is it fair to say they were all immigrant communities that were protesting?
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so. But I think by and large, many groups were led by, you know, how, you know, I don't have like a study to say how many groups were created through WeChat, but through what Jennifer said tonight, apparently that's how she learned about how some of these groups got started.
I'm
going to
get on that now because I've never heard of
and,
it.
And WeChat is a, it's like Facebook, it's not Facebook. It is like Facebook sort of, but it's a Chinese version from mainland China. And that's where it's originate. I mean, that's where it's, you know, the people who created it is still there in mainland China.
Oh, that's so. Probably why I don't know anything about it. Okay.
Yeah, it's called WeChat.
Well, thank